News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Here we go, 8:07 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Dan and Dalton on this beautiful Monday, and in studio guest as well.
Yeah, thanks to Mobile City Councilman Josh Woods for coming in and joining us this morning after a congratulations on the election win just a couple weeks ago.
Thank you, appreciate that.
It's funny, Josh, Councilman, I thought, you know, once these municipal elections have come and gone, of course we still have runoffs, but I thought maybe things would slow down in the local political scene, but that's not the case for city council. Every morning we come in and go, another big issue in front of city council this week. It just doesn't stop.
Not a bit, and I kind of joke about it. Mayor Stimson, obviously, on his way out as mayor. We have a new mayor coming in, and I really kind of joke that, I mean, every day I wake up and say, what else are we going to finish before you head out?
Yeah, there's an announcement that seems to come every week for something that Stimson would like to get done. And one of the things that has been taking up a lot of bandwidth in our local discussions is public transit. And a vote on that coming up tomorrow on how specifically the buses will run around town moving forward. Just tell us a little bit, what exactly is the council voting on tomorrow as far as WAVE transit's concerned?
Yeah, so if you remember about 90 days ago, really the conversation started before then, but because the contract was coming up and it was time to kind of look at are we going to continue with what we're doing the way we are, or are we going to kind of look for some other options? And so I guess maybe really at the first part of the year, the conversation kind of started 90 days ago. We voted roughly 90 days ago, voted to kind of kick it a little further, explore some options. So in that time period, proposals were received, reviewed, scored, and now on agenda is a new contract with a company called VIA. Well, they'll be operating as Port City Transit.
Okay.
For review and also for approval. You know, last week was first read, and traditionally with everything outside of small items on the council agenda, we review it 1 week, then we hold it over automatically for the next week. So tomorrow at 8:00, we'll have a public services committee meeting. That committee's the committee I chair. We'll take a look at it. We'll discuss that, and then we'll the intent's to vote on it tomorrow at 10:30.
So the vote itself, this is to allow VIA to be over the entire. They're currently over MOGO, correct? And we'll get into what MOGO is all about here, because I think there could be some explanation needed for exactly what that does, because it's an unusual transportation entity. But I guess they've done a good enough job where the council's been impressed with the job that they have done, and so they're now going to be over the entire WAVE bus system, correct?
That's true. That's right, Dan. And kind of just another joke I always make is I know more now about potholes and things that I never knew about than I have in my entire life. And really, since the first of the year, transit's been one of those issues that I've come to learn and come to dive into a little bit. Just because it's, you know, you see the buses, and I'd probably say the vast majority of residents of the city of Mobile maybe have been on a bus a handful of times, and that might be for a special circumstance.
Yep.
So, but really, at the end of the day, it does serve the citizens of Mobile, especially citizens that really rely on transportation each and every day to get to a doctor's appointment, get to a grocery store, and to go about their lives. So what we have now is obviously we have these main routes up and down major thoroughfares, and we have bus stops. And then we also have, you know, more of a paratransit, which is you can kind of call if you need to, if you're maybe disabled or handicapped, you can call and you can arrange transportation. So really, we've had this for, I guess, probably going on a decade, or our traditional model of what transit looks like. With VIA, I know what we can talk about MOGO in a minute, but with VIA, what their model kind of looks as it's data oriented, it's data based, it's ridership numbers, it's also bringing in technology, and really when it comes to transit, there's always there's the main lines and there's the transportation style that goes around all over the city, but at the end of the day, there's also something called the first mile and the last mile, and what that looks like is from your house, from your front door, from your residence to the bus stop, and that's the first mile. And then from wherever the transit main line drops you off, your final destination bus stop, to your final destination, that's the last mile. So VIA does a really great job of everywhere they've been, and it's Sioux Falls, I guess, or Sioux Falls, I'm not as well-traveled as you are, Dan, in other cities they've been able to come.
Yeah, I've been all over Iowa. God knows I love it out there.
I've been to that Des Moines' place. Really what they do is they come in and they holistically look at the transportation system. And right now, you know, roughly we're looking at an hour wait when you get to your first bus stop or any bus stop. You'll get an hour wait to get on that bus. You know, the ultimate goal with V is to get to a 30 minute access to transportation, and you know, hopefully improve the time of travel for your cross board, no matter what you're using public transportation for.
And it's interesting you bring up success that VIA has maybe had in other similar sized cities, because that's what Dan was just saying last week. He said, you know, I wonder, Mobile has so many contemporaries, I guess, size wise. You look at a place like Savannah, you're talking even more closely related than that with how they run as a city. But when the news came out, and I don't know if it, I think it was Lanyap that kind of dove into the finances regarding Wave Transit. And you know, any city worth their salt will have public transit, but it's not really something you expect to turn a profit on, right?
It's an
investment. It's a service. Yeah. But still, there's probably people would like to see a little bit of at least get close to trying to break even if that's not possible. And to see, I think it was, what, $10 million annually that the city has been putting in, and you've had TransDev running Wave Transit. And to see that, what was it, just $1 million coming back, that seemed so out of whack how much was being put in and how much was coming in return. But even with that, the service hasn't necessarily warranted it. Like you said, kind of an hour wait or around an hour wait whenever you stop at the bus line. And then there were issues about TransDev, and I know some of the drivers didn't like how they're being treated. I imagine there's only so much you can do about that outside of real security breaches on public transit. But maybe the city's goal isn't to turn a profit. What is the goal here with the public bus transit in the city?
Yeah, so there have been some issues, obviously, in the news lately are kind of brought to light. Because, you know, obviously the city has supplemented or funded the public transportation system, and a lot of times that looks like having to fund additional monies just to make up that gap. So while, you know, public transportation isn't necessarily is never going to be a profit maker, a profit generator for the city. It is important that, you know, as elected officials and city employees that are in the issue as well, that we treat the taxpayer dollar with the utmost respect. With that being said, what the utmost respect looks like is efficiency. Looks like of spending the dollar wisely, making sure that the transportation system is efficient, is effective. On this case, you know, we've $10 million, $12 million, $6 million, $5 million, you know, a lot of those get kind of thrown around. Well, the contract that we're looking at here at the moment is the city's guaranteeing $8 million, not to exceed $8 million. On top of that, there'll be about a $4 million funding from federal funding coming from, obviously, the feds. And in addition to that, VIA's also got an amazing group or amazing collective department that they constantly are looking for other funding options through federal things. So really you kind of got that. So with this contract, the city, you know, out of pocket, the taxpayer dollar when it comes to local, is not going to exceed $8 million, which, you know, to me is a win at the moment. On top of that, you know, having that $1 million come in from TransDev and, you know, having to fund additional monies on top of that. So that not only locks the city in or really kind of caps what the city's exposure is when it comes to that, but kind of going back to the other places that VIA's operated, while they've, you know, from based on what we've seen, they've never really, you know, turned a profit per se. Whenever you start at the top and get into the bottom line, what they have done is been able to increase ridership. So hopefully, you know, not promising anything, but hopefully what we'll see is that $1 million that in revenue coming in turn into $2 million as we increase ridership. And what that ridership number looks like, the efficiencies come from, you know, efficiencies with what the vehicles that transport people. Instead of the big buses, we might go to some smaller buses. Instead of big buses running these major routes, we might have some smaller things. And then on top of that, you know, having access after that first and last mile to transport or transit is very important. So that will increase the ridership. And kind of what that might look like is using technology to, you know, more of a ride share style, hailing an Uber style thing, kind of like what Mogo is, to get to that first, and then also to get from that last mile.
So, Josh, what caught my attention is that this company is very data.
Yes.
Right. So they're everything is data related. They said, no guesswork. What we do is we get the comprehensive data. We make our decisions off the data, correct? So there's going to be like a 9-month period. Is that about right? Where they're going to be able to kind of do the plan, do the initial plan, and then review it, find out what the data says, and then become more efficient from there, from that point. Am I right?
Yes, sir, that's right, Dan. And, you know, one of the things that really kind of always irks me personally is whenever you go into an organization or a company or a place and whenever you ask a question like, well, hey, why do we do it this way? Well, that's the way we've always done it. And to me, that whenever we were talking to Via, that's their mindset is they try to get away from that. There needs to be facts. There needs to be data. And that's what you're going to see over the next 9 months. This isn't going to be all these changes. People aren't going to, you know, buses aren't going to disappear. Routes aren't going to stop. But over the next 9 months, what they'll do is they'll come into the community and they'll actively listen. We really don't have a whole lot of data. We got some general guesses of what the data and the ridership looks like. But over the next 9 months, what VIA will do is they'll install their data collectors on the buses and the transit, and they'll start collecting ridership, frequency of use when it comes to routes, and really start kind of redesigning, if need be, redesigning what the routes look like moving forward.
Yeah, good.
Talking with Councilman Josh Woods, at VIA Transit, and you mentioned MOGO Rideshare. That's where a lot of people know this company from. You said they're going to be going forward with Wave. It'll be Port City. What was it?
Yeah, so the company or the LLC or the that you know, we operating is called Port City Transit.
Port City Transit. Yeah. So MOGO Rideshare, we've heard so much about it on the morning show, and I believe it was a chamber project, right? And getting together with VIA, and I've heard they've had success. I haven't seen it because it's downtown. A lot of I've taken people to and from Brooklyn a lot. Tell us a little bit about MOGO Rideshare and some of the success they've seen.
Yeah, so MOGO operated, I guess, over the last year really full force. It was kind of a partnership, or it was a partnership between the chamber and the city, really to within the Hank Aaron loop there, so the downtown area, to try to, you know, I guess do a more efficient job of getting people to, whether you work at Airbus or Austell or downtown transportation. And they've been very, very efficient, very effective. I want to say that the wait times are very small, and it is heavily utilized. They showed some data. They gave us some positive comments that they've received from folks, and it's been very efficient. And so we're looking forward to kind of maybe, it will be rolled into what the new contract looks like, but looking forward to maybe possibly doing that, you know, all across the city.
Okay, all across the city. And I guess that would be part of this 9-month process where they see what's working and what isn't, because I was kind of picturing, you know, maybe MOGO Rideshare and some of the lesser traveled routes, but would the thought still likely be a place like Airport Boulevard, where you might get more riders than other spots, that you keep a bus, or I know one of the candidates mentioned trolleys possibly coming.
That's kind of the same thought. I mean, you'll still have those main lines, those main thoroughfares, but also too, you know, the advantage kind of utilizing MOGO, again, that first and last mile, that's something that, you know, I went on the app, and did this about, I guess, maybe about 4 months ago, 5 months ago. Went on the app, tried to place what my route would look like or what my ride would look like. I would have to, you know, leave my home. I'd have to walk all the way up to Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. I'd have to stand there, still looking at probably within the hour. Then I'd have to, you know, get off the bus at the mall and then wait for an amount of time there, then finally make my way downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So that first and last mile really is going to be key to efficiency in transport, and also increase some ridership. So what it might look like is me calling, texting, going online or using the app to hail a ride or hail a first stop, and then I get to my bus stop, and then I ride the main lines, and then, you know, once I get to my final, I might would do the same thing if I didn't want to walk. So really increasing ridership is kind of what VIA is looking at, and they do that through, you know, utilizing that first and last mile transport that, you know, really isn't happening right now.
I think one thing that citizens of Mobile will, I think they'll be in favor of, they'll like the optics of seeing some of the smaller buses make their way around the city, because we can assume that they're doing the job. They're smaller, and yet they're doing enough to get to do the job for on that route. And I think that's because it's kind of disconcerting to see these gigantic 55 seat buses, you know, with two or three people on them, which generally we see that a lot. And we understand it's a service, it's for people who are underserved and need the help. But the smaller buses just make sense. When do you think we'll start to see some of that?
Yeah, so, I mean, again, going back, you know, without hypothesizing what it's going to actually look like, you know, maybe 2 years from now, But that's the potential of it. Instead of using these larger buses, obviously I would, you know, everybody would probably think that there's higher maintenance costs associated with these buses. It could be some changes, could be some smaller style vehicles, some smaller buses utilized on the main routes, or, you know, again, but it all goes back to what that data, what VIA is going to collect over the next 9 months. And also those community meetings, a key point I do want to say or add to the conversation is a key point is that VIA is going to, over the next 9 months, they're really going to dive in. They're really going to bring stakeholders in. There's multiple layers of stakeholders that they bring in and they seek comment before any of these changes or if there are changes are made. So that's really key, is relying on the data, seeing what areas are underserved, potentially adding some bus stops, but also, you know, readjusting what the vehicle and how we get about the city.
As far as the council, everyone pretty much on the same page for this, or is there dissent? What have you noticed?
Yeah, so obviously we haven't had a committee meeting, a public services committee meeting, due to last week. It was scheduled for last week, but then we had to wait for the results of the election to come in, and that took a while. So we rescheduled that. It's going to be 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. That'll be when we kind of really hash it out. But you know, in the meantime, I had, you know, as responsible committee chair, I have reached out to the different city council members, asked for any input, tried to seek and get any information that could be expected. So a couple changes might occur tomorrow. I know one of the things right now, the contract with TransDev, that's in place, it was a 3-year then a 2-year, so we're might instead of a straight 5, we might be looking at changing the term. That might be up for discussion, but you know, outside of that, really the I think that the real draw of for me, at least, the real draw for this contract and working with VIA is really the data drivenness of it. So
I like, you know, to me that sounds great. I love the fact that the company is data-driven, and that to me says accountability. A couple more council questions on the way. We're running a little bit late here, and we will be right back with Josh Woods. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 7:28 on Mobile Mornings with Josh Woods, District 6. Councilman in studio.
Yeah, we're discussing this vote coming up tomorrow in front of the city council, whether to this new contract with VIA Transit, where the city will put in $8 million and a federal grant $4 million and have a new transportation company running Wave Transit. And then after 9 months of getting the data together, maybe coming up with some new ideas. And I'm sure, Josh, you guys have talked about maybe while you were discussing possibilities, something like this came up, which is similar to the MoGo rideshare. But as Texter said, should we use Uber and develop a voucher system the city supports? Could be a less expensive system. I'm sure you guys thought of all kinds of possibilities.
Yeah, and that's one thing that really, after the conversations with VIA and meeting with them multiple times, you know, they don't just look in, they don't just say, well, we're just a bus route, we're just here to run the bus routes. Instead, they look at it holistically. Again, they're focused on getting that ridership up. So that is something, especially that first and last mile style. And, you know, also, too, things that they could look at is partnering with universities in the south, Spring Hill, Bishop State, looking at, you know, working with them to possibly utilize some of their commuters, too. So that's, you know, all that's really part of the grander vision of what transit looks like in Mobile.
We kept you so long that first segment, kind of running out of time here, but there's so much in front of the city council. Would love to have you on again here soon. Maybe talk about blight. I know that Mayor Stimson brought that up on Friday. That's something you guys will be discussing at the council. And we've had a ton of text. I know it's something you guys have already voted on, but the Water Street, looking at that and how that can maybe become a little more pedestrian friendly. We'd just love to get you back in here over the next few weeks to talk about some of that new stuff.
For sure, I'd love to. We got a lot going on, and it's going to be a fun couple months.
Hey, congratulations on the win.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Or you wouldn't even be here.
That's true.
But now you're the expert, so we wanted to bring you in.
For sure. Well, thank you to District 6 for believing in me. I greatly appreciate it. Look forward to serving you for 4 years.
Yeah, they overwhelmingly believe in you, Josh. 8:30, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5.
A35 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on a Monday, a beautiful Monday at that. And right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive, where we talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're great. Just mentioned it, but absolutely fantastic weather this morning, and that forecast set to roll through the week. Good time to get out to McConnell Automotive, and this is some windows down or top down riding around weather, Louie.
That's right. You're talking about top down. We've got two convertibles sitting over there. Got a Buick Corsica. Also have a Toyota Solara, and they are nice. I mean, real nice. Got some great get deals going on trucks. I hope everybody looked at the trucks at South Alabama the other day pulling those floats. Man, that was gorgeous looking. We got some Yukons and Yukon XLs out there. Also have 0% going on trucks and $12,000 off. That's right, $12,000 off. So got a great selection of used cars, so come on by and see us. It's a beautiful day today.
Yeah, and with those great deals on the trucks, got hunting season on the way, too. I know some folks that could use those in the woods.
That's right. We got a bunch of used trucks over there, four-wheel drives, right, certified, just ready for hunting season. So check them all out online at McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Ratta. Go see him at McConnell Automotive. You'll find him on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and that website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
837, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 on Mobile Mornings. I want to get some texts here real quick. 251-343-0106.
Texter here. Good morning, guys. I thought Anthony Clark Banks was the best candidate in Pritchard, but I think he got less than 40 total votes and should just take the L and move on. So Pritchard, the returns took so long to find out who would be in the runoff for the Pritchard mayoral race. They waited until last week to count the provisional ballots. Then for some strange reason, only counted four of the 30 provisional ballots, if I remember that number correctly. And the reason behind that, they said that many of the ballots were filled out in the wrong locations for the voters. And there were some questions about why they weren't stopped at their polling places. But then now you have a lawsuit that's been filed in Pritchard, and Clark Banks, one of those filing the lawsuit, as Jason pointed out there on the text line. And that's because they said they received 13 more provisional ballots that were turned in late and left uncounted. They were delivered 24 hours past the deadline. And you have Stephanie Johnson Norwood, who's vice president of the Pritchard City Council, who says council members were never told about the ballots before certification, and now she wants a judge to order them counted. And why that matters, you have the incumbent Gardner, who finished with, I believe, three more votes than the third place finisher, Lorenzo Martin. So we'll see where that leads to in Pritchard. But some election drama that continues now almost 3 weeks after the election. And we're getting awfully close to that runoff, by the way, too, if that's going to go off on time.
I can't, I don't know how they're going to sort all this out.
Yeah, by September 26th, right? 23rd. Jason also asked, do we think Mayor Stimson is trying to finish strong, or are these legacy moves? It seems like he's been much more active recently than in the past. I don't know if he's been more active or if it seems that way because these are smaller projects than the big projects, right? So long, all we heard about was the new Civic Center Arena. Of course, the I-10 Mobile River Bridge and Bayway project, the parking garage and the Corps of Engineers. They've had such massive projects to debate and discuss. When you get to things like, even though it's still big money, but an animal shelter, that's taken up a lot of the bandwidth.
$10 million. Yeah,
becoming more pedestrian friendly, whether it's Water Street or what have you. And then this transit situation. None of them are as big as those massive projects, but they are all things it seems that Stimson wants to get taken care of before he leaves office.
Yeah, and you know, just a functioning city council. Think about that, Dalton. Where are we with this Ingram situation now with, is William Carroll filing the lawsuits at the deadline on Friday? He's not happy about losing an election to somebody he says didn't really
meet the residency requirements.
She didn't meet the residency requirements, according to what William Carroll believes for sure. So even moving forward in Mobile, it might get a little sticky.
Yeah, and Tim texted again about that. We've had several texts about that District 2 lawsuit this morning, but Tim says William Carroll got his ass kicked and is not man enough to accept it. I don't know if that's the case necessarily. I mean, when we've talked with Councilman Carroll, I've enjoyed having discussions with him. I'm not in his district. I don't know how I would have voted if I were in that district. But there is something to the fact that if you lose an election and lose it in that fashion where you're not even making the runoff,
yeah,
how hard are you going to fight to retain that office where clearly your constituents didn't vote you back in?
I mean, it's a fair question. It just is a fair question because, again, they spoke. Now, was she legally on the ballot? Someone's going to have to decide that. Mm-hmm. But certainly the audience, the public, she's who they preferred, and that's got to sting a little bit for William Carroll.
Yeah. So would he be filing the lawsuit to get back in, or is it just, hey, she didn't meet the residency requirements by my vantage point, and someone should look into it? Which kind of lane is he going down there? Let's see. Michael says, Dan, was the Mary G game Friday night your longest ever high school broadcast? Man, that was a marathon, he says.
Yeah, I think it was. What we noticed was the NFL game was going on at the same time as our game. If they kicked off at the exact same time or not, I don't know. Maybe NFL might have been 7:10. We were 7:05. NFL games take much longer than high school games. Sometimes we're blamed because of TV timeouts. That was not it.
Mm.
There were and we noticed that they were 7 minutes into the third quarter, we were still at halftime. It was 9:05 when we kicked off the second half. Game starting at 7:05. Do the math. That means if it stretched out like that in the second half, it'd have been a 4-hour game.
Man, wow.
I mean, that
was a marathon.
I mean, to tell you. And for the first time that I can really remember, that 3:20 a.m. call that morning so I could come in and do this job, it ate me alive.
Gotcha on Friday night.
Second half, it ate me alive.
Michael also says, as far as the businesses downtown, should tell the city to clean up the homeless and vagrants first before worrying about their buildings. So the city should worry about the board in their eye before they worry about the speck in business's eye. I think they would probably tell you that those aren't completely separate subjects, that by maybe fixing some of the issues with vacated buildings downtown, that would help out some with the homeless situation.
Right. But right. They're definitely linked together. But you see what Trump did in Washington, D.C., and just optics-wise, he cleared it all out by getting the homeless to places, shelters and things like that where they could stay.
Let's see. Philip, he's wanting after tonight's flag football game, in which I make my highly heralded coaching debut.
Yeah.
He wants us to do a post-game presser tomorrow, Nick Saban style.
Okay.
Well, if we lose, I'll give you the Nick Saban presser. If we win, I don't know. I might have to go like Van Gundy style or something like that. I'm not sure.
It's 8:44. Dan and Dalton, good morning.
And welcome back. Mobile Mornings here on FM Talk 106.5. And it's time for Law 251 with Tobias and Comer Law. Brian Comer, kind enough to join us in studio this morning. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Dalton.
Good to see you again. I know pretty fired up. Football's back here.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Great time of year.
Probably should leave that there.
Probably should. Lots to talk about with you today, as always. And appreciate you coming in last time, breaking down some of the Supreme Court rulings. There will be many more where that came from.
Absolutely.
That and plenty more. Also looking forward to getting you in to talk some politics and political news, really, going forward. But let's talk a little bit about some accidents and trucking accidents, semi-truck accidents to be particular here, because at Tobias and Comer Law, you guys work, obviously, so many different types of injury cases. And these are cases that I imagine result in some pretty big time injuries, some of these big trucking accidents.
Yeah, they do. And, it's something that we take very seriously. Anytime somebody's been catastrophically injured, whether it be from a defective product like we've talked about before or from some other instance, but here, unfortunately, given the size of some of the trucks and the speeds that they're driving, particularly on the interstate highways, if there is a collision, that's just a lot of force that then translates, into the person's vehicle that gets hit. And that's not to say that most of the folks are bad people or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, these crashes happen. I mean, we have accidents all the time, you know, on airport or Dauphin or wherever of cars. Well, the same thing applies with whether it be inattention or somebody not doing what they're supposed to do, following the rules. They can cause these crashes and unfortunately result in serious injuries.
Yeah. I mean, you think if you're on the football field and you get hit by a lineman running full speed, it's going to hurt more than when you get hit by a cornerback that's running right. full speed. And the same goes with the mass of these vehicles. But I was thinking, and you were talking about it too, a lot of these truck drivers, they drive for someone, part of a larger network, usually their carrier. And I imagine they have teams that are teams of lawyers maybe that are ready to roll. Is that kind of how this works for some companies, some trucking companies? If they know that one of their vehicles has gotten into an accident, they have a certain protocol they're already following.
Absolutely. And so, and it's not just the attorneys, but so they'll have accident reconstructionists. They'll have investigators that go out to the scene literally as the debris is being cleaned up while the vehicles are still there. And we've talked about this a lot in terms of, you know, responding quickly to a case or when, what to do in the event somebody's been in a crash. Well, here, that's taken really to the next level because things, little details matter at the scene. Skid marks, for instance. You can learn so much from skid marks. How far were the skid marks? How far back were they before the impact? That can tell you the speed. That can tell you how the vehicle, how the brakes were applied. Was it something that they were slowing down or were they really getting on them? Which would usually be the latter to leave the skid marks. Glass debris that's on the that's left there at the scene. All of those things together really paint a picture from an evidentiary standpoint of what happened. And so what we do, and definitely what the trucking companies do in the event of a wreck, is they go document every bit of that. And so if we can't do something comparable, and it's never going to be the night of, and I'm not saying to get calls the you know from the scene of the wreck or anything like that, but if you can do it within short order, that evidence is still there. Witnesses can be talked to, you know, and the evidence collected, and then to determine, hey, is this something that we can do? And so that's part of the beauty of what we do on our end. And we've talked about the contingency fee agreement before, where you don't have to pay anything up front, only if there's a recovery. Mm-hmm. And so what that does is we advance those costs, and so that really puts the customer, puts the client on an even playing field with this company that has, you know, an entire army of people it sends out.
Yeah, I mean, you've said it so many times before, but the earlier that Tobias and Comer can get out to a site where something happened, all that information you just laid out really kind of paints the picture and helps at least the person that comes to you fight on a more of a level playing field with some of these companies. I mean, you hear people say, this ain't my first rodeo.
Right, right.
So many of these trucking companies, they've been through this, done that. I would imagine most of the time, someone who's involved in an accident with a big truck, probably their first time dealing with something like that.
Sure. Yeah, it is. And, you know, and I actually talked with someone this morning, and it was her first time going through a different type of situation. But she said, you know, this is the first time I've ever talked to a lawyer. And folks don't really understand what's going to happen. And, you know, a lot of times you can get a phone call after the crash from the carrier or from whether it be the insurance company or the trucking company and try to, you know, offer pennies on the dollar or something like that. And you think, oh, well, man, that's a really good result. That's really nice of them or something like that. But it's typically tied to a release, which then basically lets them walk from any further responsibility. And if you've got to have multiple surgeries or you've got to have, you know, care going forward, it might not be enough to take care of it. And so those are the things that we look at. But also when we're collecting this evidence and when we're doing our due diligence on this, it's just that we're figuring out what happened. You know, is what the client or potential client said that happened, is that what happened? Or, you know, did they maybe remember it wrong? And in fact, they pulled out in front of the 18-wheeler, and it's not the 18-wheeler's fault. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the due diligence that we do, is to determine, okay, what happened, and then what are the available remedies, or what options are there, if any?
Yeah, a real way to level the playing field,
exactly,
as it were. Talking with Brian Comer from Tobias and Comer Law for another edition of Law 251. And whenever, you know, and we talk about accidents all the time on Mobile Mornings, obviously it's a big part of the morning, is letting people know where accidents are and what to avoid. And then when you get a really bad wreck, of course, we're in here praying and hoping for people that are involved in those. And usually when an 18-wheeler is involved, a semi-truck, people go, man, I hope that's not bad. You don't always say that about when you know a couple vehicles have gotten into a fender bender, but generally because of the size of them, seen some pretty catastrophic injuries from wrecks like that.
Yeah, unfortunately. And we've talked about some of those in the past. And again, I mean, it's just the nature of physics, really, because you've got that much mass moving at a particular speed, and that's going to cause a certain amount of damage. Even a glancing blow can be much more serious and much more impactful than the same kind of impact from a F-150 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, and that's something that we're aware of every time we meet with somebody who's had something really terrible happen to them or a loved one. This is the worst day of their life, and this is the worst thing that's happened. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we do is take that from them, at least the legal worry. What are we supposed to do? Who are we supposed to talk to? That's something that we take on ourselves in their place so that they can work on healing and getting better and hopefully getting back to where they were.
Yeah. So, some bullet points from this, and it's not just with trucking accidents, but really if you've been involved in an injury case here and you're looking at your options, the quicker you can get the team out there, the better, like sure. You said, because you can get on the scene, figure out what's going on. And when you have these companies, like a lot of these trucking companies, you mentioned that they're wanting to settle and get this thing done and over with so they can move on. Meanwhile, the victim in a case might not realize exactly what their long-term life outlook is.
Right? Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, unfortunately, you know, another reality of it is in the event of something really bad happening, is people on my side of the aisle, that is people representing injured people, sometimes will call these people who've been injured and say, hey, you know, we can do this. And mm-hmm. So if you're, we've talked about this before, when you're looking for a lawyer, you want to know, okay, is this somebody who's just going to do basically exactly what the insurance company's doing and try to flip this for some, you know, quick payday.
Yeah.
And they're not doing right by the client. And so you want to make sure that when you're hiring somebody, and this is something we take pride in, are you going to have them throughout? Are they equipped to handle your case from the moment it first walks in the door until the very last appeal is taken, if it goes all the way to a verdict? And, you know, you just got to be careful when you're dealing with that, because, and I actually saw this, my parents were in a wreck up in Tuscaloosa years ago. And shortly after the wreck, they started getting letters in the mail from lawyers saying, hey, hire me to do this. And, you know, for folks who haven't gone through this, or maybe they don't know anybody who's a lawyer, I'm the first person who's been a lawyer in my family. You know, it can be overwhelming or seem like, you know, okay, well, I've got to go with this person or that person. But, you know, be mindful when you're hiring somebody of who it is that you're hiring and what it is that you're hiring them to do.
Yeah. And just to kind of piggyback on that and talk about why I love Tobias and Comer so much. I mean, already you guys are good people, so you wouldn't be running that game to get that quick payday. But when you're local like you are, and when you've been working from the same office down on Dauphin Street for so long, that's just something you can't do. You can't run a game like that and then go see the same people in the community at church or out to eat or wherever. You guys call Mobile home, this area. You've been representing it for years, so you treat the people right, but you do it the right way.
Absolutely. I live here. Desi and Lacey's families live here. We're from here. My parents still live in the community. And you know, this is something we take very seriously. And you know, not like I've said before, not every case is a case that we can necessarily take. But when we do, we're all in and we're going to help you to the fullest extent we can.
Well, I tell you, it's evident when you look at the reviews for Tobias and Comer Law. Some of the clients you've had in the past, they vouch for you 5 stars. And just the fact that you guys have been in business as long as you have, the website's great, tobiascomerlaw.com. And I know you have a bunch of information up there, like what to do if you're in a accident with a big truck, but so much more is there as well, including Law 251, our archives here. So tobiascomerlaw.com, great place to go. And I know people can call for a free consultation anytime.
Absolutely. 251-432-5001.
Well, good stuff as always, Brian. Appreciate you coming in, and hopefully it won't be that long. We'll get you back in to talk maybe some updates from the courts here soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dalton.
All right, Brian Comer with Tobias and Comer Law and Law 251. Again, yeah, check this interview out. Once it comes out, we'll put it at tobiascomerlaw.com. You can see see so much more of the great information they have there, including information about Tobias and Comer Law. Coming up next, the Jeff Poor Show. He is on the way. That does it for Mobile Mornings. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services.